Good day, dear friends. We're beginning our virtual lesson, the last virtual lesson before our Congress in Siberia. I very much look forward to meeting all of the members, the participants of this lesson. A week from now, we'll be meeting together, even less than a week. And now I wanted to go through the material that we're not going to touch during the Congress. It's better if we go through it now. This is the talk on Baal Salam's article, The Comparative Analysis of Kabbalah and Philosophy. It is located on page 71 in this book. To begin, I think you already know, but I wanted to read for you what was written about Kabbalah by the great people, the great thinkers over the last 2,000 years. For instance, Johann Reichlin, the famous German philosopher from the Middle Ages, writes, "My father, Pythagoras, father of philosophy, took his teaching from the Jewish people. Therefore, he should be called a Kabbalist. He was the first one to translate the word Kabbalah, which was not known among his peers, into Greek as philosophy. So, Pythagoras, this is how he translated the word Kabbalah." Pico Mirandola writes, "That very interpretation of the law which was revealed to the ancient people is called Kabbalah, which means to receive." Rizzi writes, "Kabbalah is called the translation of all the divine upper secrets and onto the basic language. Allegorically and Kabbalistically, it remains for centuries, forever, without any restrictions." Reichlin writes again, and this is about 15th century German philosopher, "Pythagoras' philosophy stems from the same ocean of Kabbalah. Kabbalah doesn't allow us to remain in the dust, but rises, elevates us to the next series of consciousness." Springer writes, he's another great philosopher and doctor from the Middle Ages. "Adam, the first man, knew Kabbalah well. He knew all the names of things, and therefore he gave creatures the proper names which indicated their nature. Indeed, we know that in Kabbalah, names, they point at the inner substance of that thing that it is called." Again, Pico Mirandola writes, "In all, there are two sciences. One is called combination, which is the progress of sciences. The other one speaks of things that are higher, they're above, and altogether they combine to be called Kabbalah." Lurie writes, "Existence or language is the subjective language of the wisdom of Kabbalah. It therefore follows that collectively it combines, it governs, and all the sciences like mathematics and physics, they stem from this wisdom. And it's their rules and their laws are subject to this wisdom, this science's rules and laws, and you cannot have them without it." Gertrude Bruno writes, "Kabbalah gives an unspoken principle to the higher, higher name. This is what we call Davaya. From it, it brings out four principles, each of which is divided into 12, and each of those into 72, and so on, until into infinite branches. Just as we have infinite amount of species and subspecies, it follows that everything can be brought to one single root. Just as there is one light, and just as all the mirror reflections can still be brought to a single formal principle, the source of all of these images." This is what Bruno wrote. Leibniz, a famous mathematician and philosopher, He writes, because people did not have the right key to the secret of the universe, the thirst for knowledge was reduced to all kinds of trifles, and this led to the appearance of a vulgar Kabbalah. This is what we call mystics and all sorts of erroneous interpretations, which are certainly far from the authentic Kabbalah, and all sorts of fantasies that are, they call themselves magic. And this is what the books are filled with. Schnegel writes, real aesthetics is Kabbalah. What he was doing mainly is he was studying nature from aesthetics. Gethe writes, the real approach to the Bible is multifaceted and infinite and cannot be quantified. Solovyov, which all the Russian people should know, Kabbalah is not a product of the Middle Ages or Alexandrite approach. It's a seal into the Jewish history and its clear distinction from everything else is the worldview that is not characteristic of any others, including Greek philosophies, including Plato, and it deals with the truth and the substance of existence. And in Kabbalah, the material world is merely the last material degree of manifestation of existence. Bulgakov writes, the idea of man as an inner cosmos that he is, which is written about in the inner philosophy, an inner element of man, is never described as fully as in Kabbalah. And there are many more. We have whole books on the research on Kabbalah by great scientists and thinkers across all ages. We have many of them. Newton, for instance, he was studying Hebrew precisely in order to study Kabbalah. And so on. We have a great plane of additions to Kabbalah that were given by great philosophers and scientists of all ages. And what we're going to do is we're going to turn to an article by Baal Salam, a comparative analysis of Kabbalah and philosophy, in order to have a better, more accurate understanding of what the scientists were saying, and who understood the difference between Kabbalah and philosophy. And still, they considered themselves philosophers. And when I was defending my dissertation, though I was defending on Kabbalah, it was still done in the philosophic department of the Russian Academy of Sciences. There is a department. So Kabbalah still pertains to philosophy, and my students who want to study Kabbalah in universities, for instance, my daughter, she graduated also from a philosophic department, and her major was philosophy and Kabbalah. So in our spheres of knowledge, Kabbalah still connects to philosophy, even though, as all these great thinkers write, it is the foundation of philosophy. And it is very different from modern philosophy. And this is what we're going to talk about today, this distinction. First, the definition of spirituality. Philosophy thinks that the material is the product of the spiritual, that the soul begets the body. The problem of this claim is that there must be a connection between the spiritual and the material, and this connection is absolutely non-existent, meaning in our material world we can do anything we want. virtually, and it does not reflect on the spiritual world at all in any way. The wisdom of Kabbalah states that the spiritual has no connection to the material at all. There is no link, there is no way to do anything to bring the material to any near the spiritual or affected in any way. Meaning, the spiritual world is completely cut off from the material world. There's no contact with us, between us and it. All we have is this embryo within us to the spiritual world. That's why we're drawn to it. But both of these worlds, they are screened. They are separated by this barrier, machsom. And if we aspire to the upper world, there we need to build our system, our new spiritual body, and only thus will be able to exist inside the spiritual body and research it, study it, sense it, and elevate it. Additionally, like any other science, Kabbalah says that you can only research and study what is subject to being studied, meaning what we cannot sense, we can't talk about. So the first thing we need to do is advance in our sensation, our perception of the upper world. Then we're going to know what is it that we are studying. Therefore, our entire study is aimed at beginning to perceive the upper world, to perceive its objects and forces and actions, and then we're going to understand what is present there and what the Kabbalistic books are speaking of. In the meantime, what we're doing is preparing ourselves to start perceiving this upper world. And once this new sense is revealed in us, what you call the quality of bestowal, the reflected light, the intention to bestow, to the extent of this force and its strength, we'll be able to infiltrate this upper world. And the force of the intention is like a ray of light, which is going to illuminate the spiritual space between before us. And we're going to feel it, sense it, and live in it. When a person enters the spiritual world, essentially all of our corporal reality disappears for him. He understands that this corporal reality is a reflection, it is a shadow of the upper spiritual world. Therefore, when his body dies, as we've spoken before, he remains in the spiritual world after he has found his point, his in it. Even if it's still an embryo, he continues to develop in it. The essence of the upper force, the next paragraph. Kabbalah does not deal with the essence of the upper force, and it does not try to define it. Kabbalah defines itself as an experimental science, and what cannot be attained, it's not spoken about. It also does not negate what is negate this, because even negation includes some sort of understanding. This is why in Kabbalah it is called what is not attained cannot be named. Meaning we only speak of what the Kabbalists pass on to us, or what we attain ourselves. This is a very precise science, which studies as a person develops this new sensory organ, the quality of bestowal, reflected light, and to that extent begins to feel, to sense the upper world. To that extent, he begins to live in it and understand it, understand the interconnections in it. Then the book that he studies becomes a guidebook. Like when we're in a foreign country where we see things, but we don't know what's where, a book tells us where we are and what we're looking at, a guidebook. Therefore, we don't speak of the upper light in and of itself as a light that exists outside of us, or anything else that exists outside of us, but only of what we attain within. What's outside, what we don't perceive, we don't speak of. Therefore, if I want to feel what exists within me today, all I need to do is perceive the quality of bestowal. And then everything that everything that's in it, I will begin to sense it. Spiritual is a force that's not manifested in the body. Kabbalah defines the spiritual as having nothing to do with time, space, matter, and it represents a force that is not clothed in the body. It's a force without body, outside of it, beyond it. It's very similar to what physicists say these days, that essentially there is a state which exists above time, above space, above movement, and this state determines our entire world. So this state which exists above nature, and this is the state that the Kabbalists call spirituality. Spirituality is the spiritual vessel is a force. When speaking of a force in the spiritual, we're not talking about the upper light in and of itself, because we don't feel it. But we feel everything within ourselves. So we feel the influence of some kind of force on me. Just like today, I don't feel the actual force that is influencing me, only how my senses react to it. Then, according to how my senses react, I can see what is affecting me. But again, I don't feel what it is, that actual substance, but only how it affected me and how I react to it. Therefore, we are unable to attain the upper light, and this is what Kabbalah says very, very clearly. The person who ascends to the level of the upper world, he still attains everything within. However, our goal is to reach the final, the highest level of equivalence to this upper degree, and then we can speak about it in full measure. But again, we do this only from our own attainment, because we are creatures, and opposite us there is this upper force, the Creator. Therefore, as we attain His qualities, we can speak of His qualities with respect to us, but not about Him specifically. The Kabbalah divides these states as follows. What we attain is called the Creator, because He has created us. And what's outside of us, the root of this force, where it comes from, which we do not attain, we call Atzmuto, meaning something, something. He is something. These vague names that don't speak of anything. What they say is that he's completely detached from us, from our attainment, the vessel and the light. The light meaning the impression from the vessel of the light. This we can attain. This is why we attain simultaneously matter and form. Because the impression is the form and the force is the matter. Meaning when I attain something, I attain the influence on me and the consequence of that influence. Therefore, the light that influences me, I sense its influence, and also what it wants to do in me, what it brings me. And this is called the actual attainment. We attain the form. What does it mean to attain the form? The light influences us in all the way that it does. And in so doing, it forms us, molds us, just as a drop of semen inside the mother begins to form into the future child, and gradually it begins to form under the influence of this force in this seed. And all the mother does is provide the nutrients to it. And if the seed receives nutrients either from the mother or from someone else, it doesn't matter. But if the seed is not a human seed but something else, then obviously something else would develop. therefore, we look at not the light in and of itself, but his influence and his result. And we name the lights in accordance to the result. We name these, we give the light five different names. Nefesh, Ruach, Nechshama, Chaya, Yechida. And each of these degrees is divided into sub-degrees and sub-degrees. Just as in our world, there is the inanimate, vegetative animate and human nature, and their final latest degree called Yechida. But within this nature, there are many sub-species and sub-types. In inanimate, vegetative, animate levels of nature, there are thousands, even millions of species and subspecies. This whole system of interconnection, even though the light is divided into five sections, each of those sections is further divided into many subsections. So in each one of them affects us. It molds, it shapes a certain form inside of us. And then in accordance with it, as we study it, these shapes that are made within us, this is what we call the light, in accordance to its influence on us. Form and matter in Kabbalah. Despite the fact that what the vessel senses, which is love, it is the result of the gift, meaning we receive something which we feel as it was a gift to us, and at the same time, in this gift, if we're speaking of the upper force, the upper influence onto me, we always feel it as something wonderfully pleasant, as a fulfillment, as pleasure, something very much desired. In addition to this gift, we truly feel it as a gift. It comes to us unexpectedly without any preparation on our part, although we always strive, we aspire to receive it, but its appearance is always unexpected. And within this gift, we feel love. And this love, which is manifested in the gift and the light's influence on us, it evokes in us a very natural, instinctive influence back to the light. So the most important part is to reach this gift, this light's influence on us. And this love is obviously more important than the gift itself, because it is assessed by, it is determined by the greatness of the giver, not the actual gift. Just as in our world, if I don't care who gives me a gift, then I don't care about the gift. For instance, my company gives me something. Like, it's understandably, I'm kind of indifferent to the company. But if this gift is brought to me by a special person, then it doesn't matter what he's given me. He can give me just a simple pen. But his token of affection for me, that's what's important, because I evaluate the gift, not by the actual gift, but the greatness of the person who gave it to me. This is also how we determine, look at what we feel in the spiritual world. When we feel the light's influence on us, something suddenly awakens in us, then the important part here, if we're already in the spiritual world, we instinctively, like I said, respond to it with the love that arises in us. But if we're still in our world without a perception of the upper world, this is where we need to cultivate with this quality artificially. In other words, we need to exert ourselves and try to be grateful, to exalt the giver in our eyes. Even though we don't sense him, we only sense a certain kind of influence on us. Suddenly I begin to understand more, feel more, I have new sensations arising in me. And this gives me a connection with the giver. The more Whenever I receive even the smallest positive influence, either in my sensations or my mind, if I feel it, I must immediately develop within a feeling of gratitude. It will expand my sensation of the gift. And then, even if the gift itself is small, I will feel it as much greater, and within it, perhaps I'll be able to also sense the giver himself. This is the right reaction, even in our world, in our states, where we are, when we begin to react correctly to all the various spiritual sensations within us, even though they're not even spiritual, but occasionally there is something that we feel in the heart and in the mind. We must immediately be grateful by exalting the giver in our eyes. And then this develops and expands our sensory organs, our senses. Malsalam writes, so there is love and this attention that bring the gift infinite value. Therefore, love is completely abstracted. Afterwards, when we begin to think of the giver's attitude towards us and not about the gift in itself, then his attitude toward us is completely detached from the gift. Then the only thing that's left is the attainment of the love, and the gift disappears, although it's erased from the heart. And naturally, this part of the science is called the attainment of the form. And it's the most important part, because in this movement, in this advancement, we begin to gradually sense the Creator. And therefore, His gifts, they are valued by us only to the extent that we can use them to sense Him to a greater degree. Meaning, the gift is like a link, a connector between Him and me. Do we have any questions about this? If there are serious questions, let's talk about them, and then we'll continue. Go ahead. Question from Krasnoyarsk. We have a lot of questions from Siberia today. If philosophy is an interpretation of Kabbalah in an egoistic world, then why is the dawn of philosophy? Why did it happen in the Middle Ages when the ego was still not sufficiently developed? After all, as the ego develops, the person's humanity's intellect and the reason develops alongside. Philosophy, in essence, it can be divided into several important phases. The Middle Ages is not the dark time on the humanity's history as we study. In reality, there were a lot of interesting things that happened. If you ask today's philosophers who can speak correctly and openly, and when I studied it back when during the USSR, it was the information was that was given to us was not correct. In reality, the Middle Ages was a complicated time of science's development. All sciences were developed very intensely during that time. It's just that they were only manifested in their application in subsequent centuries. That's one. Two. I don't have any quotes here, but just as Rechlin writes here, that Pythagoras studied with Kabbalists, all philosophy stems essentially. It doesn't matter that it stems from Kabbalah, but it did come to the world through Greek philosophy. Kabbalah did. So this is an ancient science, and these ancient Greeks studied from the Kabbalists in the times between the first and the second temple. This was a time when this group called Israel, they were all in a spiritual degree. The first temple, this is what it's called. The first temple is the level of We're not talking about a building, by the way. We're talking about the spiritual degree of attainment of the light of Chokhmah, the so-called Mochin Dechaya. It is a very high spiritual degree. We have never reached it. We will reach it in the future. And the second temple is much lower. The spiritual level is the light of Chassidim, Mochin Dez Neshama. Between these two dates, this is about 600 years, the difference, if I'm not mistaken. Over this time, many ancient scientists, they would study with the Kabbalists. And at the time, Kabbalists were on the level of the prophets. A prophet is a person who, in his attainment, has reached complete correction and therefore sees backward and forwards through the entire axis of history. And just as today, in those times, they've studied. And the Kabbalah was open for study, and many people did study and came from different nations to study it. This is how it came to the ancient Greeks, and from the ancient Greeks it went outward to the rest of the world. We should certainly therefore not think of the Middle Ages as this dark kingdom. It is a it was a development of all and the birth of all the current modern sciences, surgery and chemistry, everything. I think that our students are educated enough to know where it all came from. Question from Greece, which is very rich traditional tradition. He's asking to clarify the question. If you could talk about the difference between the ego in the spiritual worlds from our world, what we feel in our world. There is no ego in the spiritual world. It is a completely different type of ego. It cannot be compared to ours. There, the ego is the force opposite to the force of love, the force of connection and unity. And it is manifested precisely to the extent for that man can use it as a basis to for even greater unification, even greater connection. In our world, the ego is a singular force of the creature, and so it's completely different. Just as it's an animal egoism, an animal ego, just as the animals have it, only a little bit more developed. It's not the human ego. And what's the second? The second question is about the point. The point is the dead end of material development? No, I wouldn't say that. We know that the material development has reached the dead end in practically all domains. Everything that man does in this world, today we are at a dead end. It's not even a dead end, it's just a dead end for our paradigm. If we change it, naturally, without it, we're going to start sensing a completely different level of the universe. But in an egoistic individual attainment, and the struggle within, we cannot attain anything any longer. And the next level of humanity's development is when we unite together and form a new sensory organ collectively. We see that the individuals can no longer progress anymore. We have reached a dead end in sciences and everything else. We've reached a point where beyond it, everything kind of gets blurry and disappears. Because from here, our egos are—they're all aimed at receiving within, and they can't receive within directly anymore. But this point that exists within every one of us that aims at attaining something beyond that, that's not egoistic, that is collective. Every one of us has this point, and if we begin to bring them together and start connecting these points together, even if 10 points connect together, they bring the sensor to a sufficient enough intensity that it can feel that next degree, and that following advance, they continue to advance. But this advancement happens in a collective sensation and collective consciousness. And that's the difference in the way that we develop in our world and in the next world. So the fact that we have the dead end that we reach in, today, we reach it in our egoistic perception of the world, but by connecting together and uniting together, we can form a new sensory organ of the next degree. This is why today our world is not pushing us out. How is it pushing us out? It does so by showing us that we must become integrated. We must become interdependent and collective. This is why there are these combinations. There's great interdependency that is being revealed in the world. We're being shown the next degree of the world. It's gradually being revealed to us. We'll hope that we're going to be able to reach it, and then we're going to need to teach others. We're only at the very beginning, the early stages of this, at the approaching this next dimension. Further, the worlds. Atzilut Briya Yetzira Asiya. The Kabbalists define 4 degrees of love, meaning when I begin to see the difference between what I see, I can separate it into 4 distinct phases. We already spoke of the fact that what I'm dealing with is this pleasant sensation that comes to me. This is what the Kabbalists called a gift. So I receive a gift. Through this gift, I begin to study where it came from, the giver. What is this quality? Why does he relate to me so? What intention does he have? And so on. Meaning, I don't receive anything other than the actual gift, but through the gift, through the influence that it evokes in me, I can study the giver. If I were to receive like some kind of a box as a gift, I wouldn't be able to study anything from it, to learn anything from it. So I got this as a gift. Someone likes me. But if this gift, this influence onto me, enters in me, and in me it elicits a certain action, then in accordance with this action, the result of this action, the outcome, I can determine what is it that the giver wants from me. Why did he take me from one state to another state? Meaning I know my previous state, I know my current state, the changed state, and the difference between them, which qualities, which aspects were changed, and from this I can understand what is it that he wanted from me. So this difference between the previous and the current, I can determine what he is in and of himself, the giver, and subsequently the way that he changes me. These are the qualities that he has. Positive qualities. He changes me for the better. He's raising me, developing me, so I understand that he has these qualities and he wants to bring me to his level. So in accordance with this, in our advancement, we see 4 levels, 4 worlds. The giving of the gift is the world of Asiya. The multiplying, the quantity of the gifts, when I study them and I study their influence on me by the giver, the source that's concealed from me, it's called the world of Yetzirah. Then the revelation of a sensation already, of an attitude from this giver to me, meaning of love, this is called the world of Briyah. And here on this level, you begin to study the form, because in this phase, the love separates from the gift. We spoke about the fact that if I, the giver is important to me, I need to aspire to him, for him to be important to me, rather than the gift. Because the changes that he evokes in me, they're aiming me towards him. So then all of these changes, I try in these new qualities that I feel that he had begotten in me, I try to attach myself to him, to cling to him. And more to the as the gifts increase, these changes, positive changes in me, I keep on trying to cling to him. And as a result, all that's left is a sensation of love and connection, and not the gifts themselves as their initial means. And then, finally, there is the separation of love from matter, when the Creator who gives me all of these influences, he and I reach a level where we don't need gifts anymore. We attain one another and sense one another fully as the giver and the receiver, and he receives from me as well. He receives my corresponding, my responses, and we sense one another as being together. And this sensation of myself and the Creator together, this is what's called a soul. In other words, today in our world, there is no soul. There is only a point that aims us, aspires us toward the soul, toward attaining the Creator. The Creator's part in us, His quality in us, is called a soul. Naturally, the soul is split into these five parts of gradual attainment of the Creator. We call them Malchut, Zeranpin, Bina, Chokhmah, and Keter. Or we call them by the fulfillment. This is what we call these parts. Neshama, no, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, Yechida. We have questions on the topic. Question from the virtual group. Why do we sense the revelation of this concealment as though it's the first time, or do we... Of course, you know, in reality, we've passed everything already. We've completed all of these things. We already existed in all of them. But we don't sense it. This exists in us only as informational records, what's called Rishumo, which translates as records, information, genes. And when we begin to attain the upper world, there is still discoveries, new sensations, new knowledge. Because essentially when we attain the upper world, we attain it in a much more unfolded fashion. We have descended from the world of infinity, where we had existed in a beautiful, wonderful state. The only thing that was missing there was our participation, our conscious participation in it. We simply existed in it, just as a drop of semen exists in the mother's womb. On the one hand, you have everything you need. On the other hand, there is the development is lacking. That's what we had. That is why we descended to the most distant part of this state, the most absolutely opposite to this state. And now we are beginning to climb backwards on our own through unifying together. And we unify together with the help of all our workshops and lectures and lessons and congresses. And this is why it's so important for us to study together, to work together in the workshops and meet the congresses, because it is through these means, during these events, when we have the opportunities to connect together and thus collect and form that sensory organ of the next degree. This is why we're always connected during lessons and some workshops and congresses. These are very important things. And then every group individually works to unite together, because without uniting together, our aspirations, our points, we're not going to be able to form even the smallest possible, meaning the 10 points together, that sensor, that sensory organ. We're not going to be able to sense the upper world. And this sensor of the 10 points, it's made up of 10 egos, because there are 10 egoists who have risen above their egos and connected their points of aspiration toward the Creator, the upper force, the upper world. That's what they form. And these points now have a certain level of a certain force, because they have risen above their ego and united in spite of it. So when we connect together, bring together men, women, doesn't matter where or how, all together, all across the world, and all the different groups and groups between themselves, when we collect this sensory organ of the upper world, we need to understand that it's our most important work. If we don't do this, the entire science in and of itself doesn't mean anything. It's a practical science. Only after we begin to, after the practical part appears, after we begin to sense the upper world, only then can we start talking about what is it that we're studying. Until then, we can't even speak of anything. We're drawn to it, but we're like these, we're like suspended in the air. We don't know what's happening. This is how we feel. It's very easy to confuse us. We're always forgetting things because we don't have the proper understanding of what it is that we're sensing and feeling. Balsalam tells us that force is there's only force, no matter. Matter doesn't exist in and of itself. He says that the actual matter is the force, and not the matter of our corporeal reality, despite the fact that it doesn't have an image that can be perceived by human senses. It doesn't make it any less valuable. In other words, the force in and of itself is everything. He takes, for instance, he says, look at oxygen, which is part of most things in the world. A bottle of oxygen by itself looks empty because oxygen cannot be perceived by our five senses. We can't see it with our eyes. We can smell it with our nose. We cannot touch it. And this is the same is true of hydrogen. But if we combine these two elements, hydrogen and oxygen, together they immediately form water, which can be drunk. And if you then you can take this water and combine it with another element, it can turn into a hard substance like a rock. Or you can cool water and turn it into ice. Or then you can heat it and turn it into vapor, which cannot be seen or felt. So we see from this example of these two elements, two states of oxygen and hydrogen, which they can be combined into a liquid, solid, or gaseous states. What does this say? What does this tell us? It tells us that at the root of everything is the force. And the fact that we perceive it in all these different manifestations, it's only with respect to us. This is how we perceive it. And it doesn't matter whatsoever what these forms are. The important part is the force that's at the root of them. This is why Balsalam writes, there are states that cannot be all the images that we see in our consciousness and our five senses that we perceive, they're inconstant. They are the combination of a number of factors, just as the combination of hydrogen and oxygen. And so is true of the force that is present in them. But this present is not manifested with respect to us directly, meaning we don't sense the actual forces, we don't perceive them, we can't smell them or see them. We can only feel them once they acquire a certain form. So we don't study the actual forces, but only their influence onto us and the reactions, the forms that they build within us. What he's trying to tell us is that in our world and in the spiritual world, the laws are virtually the same. There is no difference between them. The only difference is in the spiritual world, we study the basics, the foundations of what happens in our world. The rudiments, and moreover, we understand the cause, and then we study the consequence. On the other hand, all the names that we've given material objects, they're absolutely invented. The objects that we, names that we come up with in our world, because they arise from our five senses. That's why these names are inconstant, and they don't exist in and of themselves. On the other hand, any determination of a force that we give it, that we name, is that negates the creation, is also invented. And until the science comes to perceive both the form and the force that has begotten the form, until then we cannot be in a real, genuine contact with reality. One of my professions, so to speak, is ontology, the perception, attainment of reality. It's the science of attaining reality. And this is what's being studied in it, although, of course, there is a great deal of confusion there. Kabbalah introduces a very simple, very precise picture into this, which thus far, unfortunately, the scientists cannot accept because they're missing the understanding of the next state, which can be beyond the screen, beyond the barrier. In other words, all material actions that we see and make, we need to see the connections between them and the person who makes them, because the person is who feels them, senses them, and they also understand that person is part of nature, part of matter as well. So what is this talking about? It's the same thing that Einstein said, that everything we perceive only with respect to us, to our sensory organs, and all that we attain is limited by that. We don't perceive what's actually out there, but only what we perceive. This is the observer that Einstein has used to explain the theory of relativity. That everything is with respect to the observer. Because Kabbalah is a real science, it studies reality fully, where a fact cannot be overturned. Meaning, why? Because when we study something, we all study the same phenomena. We can kind of liken it to our world, but only partially, because in Kabbalah we attain the force, and that's why there are no doubts as far as what's being attained. Then he talks about the vessels in the light, that the essence of the receiver is to receive, the essence of the giver is the creator's light. And essentially this is where he ends his article about how the spiritual can beget the corporal, meaning the force which acts at the spiritual level. It reflects in our world, and this reflection, this shade, is us, is our world, our state, out of which we must rise to the light. Any questions, please? Go ahead. I think these are questions are related together. Vladimir from Kazakhstan asks, why is it that desire, the fire in the heart that we used to feel, disappears? Sergey from Yekaterinburg asks, how can we maintain this desire? How do we preserve ourselves in this aspiration to reveal the upper force if we don't sense it? The Creator gives us this initial aspiration within. He pushes us to Himself through all sorts of seemingly unpleasant sensations in our world. And He draws us to Himself in this this anticipation of the revelation of the truth and the meaning of all things. But then we need to keep moving on our own. This initial push that He gives us, and drawing us from, pushing us from behind and drawing us, it's temporary. Don't expect it to continue. You need to continue developing this drawing, this attraction, this desire on your own. And this depends on the environment. In other words, you need to build an environment, a group around you, in a way for it to always kind of taunt you and inspire you and draw you, so for you to always see friends who are aspiring to the goal more than you are, to be envious of them, to feel from them a support for that greatness of the goal. And for this, you need to lower yourself before them, to be inspired by them. If you see them as great, then even a small impression that they give you, you're going to see it as great. All of Rubash's articles on the group are based on this. The Creator only gives us that initial impulse, no more than that. The negative force from behind, the positive force from in front, not a big one, and only temporary. And then He begins to add more and more ego to us, meaning a force that's going to, it's a breaking force that slows us, so that we can begin to develop the opposite force that's going to keep us going forward. And the only thing we can do is finding and building the right environment for us. So if we are serious with this, we're going to advance. But this is the most important part, and it's the guarantee of our advancement. This is why I'm so eager to see, to unite, to have everyone unite in the Congress that's coming up, so that I think we can unite together, so that we will very quickly begin to see it and feel it. It's our next degree. It's right there before us. Let's do it together, and it's all gonna happen. Let's all take each other's hands so that we don't fall along the way individually. So be well, hold on to each other, and we'll see you soon. And Sasha is going to conclude. From Novosibirsk, we have a message from the group. They're the ones preparing the Congress, and they want to just say that all those people who come to the Congress the day before the Congress, Congress site is already going to be open. People are going to be able to participate in the morning lesson and work there. You'll be there as well? Yes, I'll be there as well. So don't worry. As soon as you get there, you'll see people already waiting for you. So be well, and until we see each other, take care. The coldest time, in the coldest place, the hottest, most fiery hearts gather. December 7th to December 9th in Novosibirsk, building the future together.